Speaking of roided up face versus roided up heel, Kerry Von Erich defeated Dino Bravo.
And you can put late in front of both of them. This was not part of the highlight reel of WrestleMania 7. Two guys that were going nowhere.
Right. Yeah.
Two guys that were going nowhere. Von Erich, just, I mean, this was just like, what do you do? I mean, neither guy was even getting pushed. Bravo, this was his swan song. I mean, Tornado stuck around for a little bit longer because he made it to the next Royal Rumble, pardon me. Bravo, he might have got 86 right after
not
this.
Just the commonality, too, and, you know, unfortunately they both passed away.
Bizarre, under less than flattering terms.
Well, both of them rapidly administered lead poisoning, yet only one was voluntary. Kerry's was self-induced, Dino's was
Dino
got used for a pincushion in his living room by a bunch of bullets.
Yeah, Dino Bravo being murdered by the Canadian mob for the bootlegging of cigarettes has to be the most, in an industry that never ceases to surprise you, has to be the most bizarre, and I'm not making light of it because it's not funny, obviously, but it's got to be the most bizarre wrestling death ever, Dino Bravo. It just is like,
it's
you heard about
there.
It, you're like, what? And if you tell someone, like a buddy who maybe knows who Dino Bravo is that watch wrestling later, they're like, what? They're like, come on, what would you see this on TV? Well, no, that's how it happens.
It's got to be way up there on the list. Another match that...
So that does not support my point that this is an actually underrated WrestleMania.
No, nor do the next couple here. Jake Roberts defeated Rick Martel in the blindfold match.
Obviously, this is one of the most much maligned matches in WrestleMania history.
Yeah.
It's the gimmick was stolen from Kevin Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
It's dumb. Okay, there was like no contact. I mean, should we explain? I mean, maybe people see.
They did both a blinding angle.
There was a blinding angle where, I mean, this was one of the big undercard matches
during one
for
of Jake's
show.
Drug suspensions.
Yes, yes, yes. Where they did a blinding angle where Martel, for God knows whatever reason, was out on the Brother Love show with Roberts, and he was spraying the snake with arrogance, and it made Roberts.
I spray the arrogance in your eyes.
Yeah, and it made Roberts mad, and you know there was He had spray. What's interesting, he had sprayed arrogance in people's eyes before, and it wasn't like a big deal for whatever reason. It's funny. I've seen subsequent Coliseum Home videos. I'm like, oh, well, that really kind of shot that Jake angle dead. But
it has special powers on Jake's eyes.
But they did a big angle where Jake got blinded. It was really like, I mean, they really, he really went into that, if you remember. I mean, remember he had the fake contact in that made his eyes look all crazy? So
it was a Chris Adams ripoff.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. At least I'll tell you, it's a hokey storyline, but God bless they went down fighting with it, didn't they?
They did.
I'll tell you what about this match, too, that makes me not hate as much people. This is the first non-Jesse WrestleMania, okay?
Okay.
You know what a mark I am for the man I'm about to talk about.
Right.
Bob Heenan was phenomenal on commentary. I mean, folks, a wrestling promotion's idea of comedy is usually not funny.
Right.
Bobby Heenan on this show, I'm telling you, he is better than a lot of stand-up comics. Okay,
right.
He's better than Dane Cook, I'll tell you that much, during this match. I mean, he has all these awesome things, like one patented Heenan one-liners. He's like, I think Martel should be allowed to take the hood off, close his eyes, and work on the honor system. You know, it's just stuff like that.
So Bobby Heenan's better than Dane Cook. Does he also steal from Louis C.K.?
Oh, I see that. I don't know. But there's some other good ones in here. I forget. God, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank. I used to like actually have these committed to memory, these Heenan one-liners from this match. Heenan is phenomenal on this WrestleMania. He is at his best annoying Monsoon.
Yeah.
And like just... And, getting that Monsoon, that patented Monsoon reaction he could get. And look, to me, the commentary, and this doesn't happen much, helped save this match for me somewhat. Jake obviously goes over. After this was kind of Martel's big heel push.
Yep.
And he does the mega job, which he had to,
I think,
here. You know, there's no, you know, it's the usual thing where the crowd was into this, though.
Right.
You know, smart marks like you and me and people who listen to the show make fun of this match all day long. You know, Jake was unique in that he could kind of, the psychology of the match, he could get it down.
I was going to say, on paper, aren't these two workers that they would logically think could carry this off? And Jake, from what I remember, did have the whole thing of, like, the crowd roaring as he was closing in on him. You're getting hotter. You're getting hotter. They did milk it that way a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, that worked.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I remember when Heenan's other good line. When the crowd was all pulling for Jake, when Jake was pointing, and like, yeah, he's in that direction. Heenan's like, Martel's probably got his fans here too. L.A., fashion conscious city. You know, I've already. He had another good one that's escaping me, though. I can't remember. Yeah, this was kind of bad.
Yeah. The next one, notable. It's a footnote in WrestleMania history, but the first of what would be 20 subsequently WrestleMania matches for The Undertaker.
Just in case people are keeping following the card at home, we jumped over Hart's Nasties, which we already talked about.
The Nasties
winning the titles. That's it for Jim Neidhart. Yeah. Hit the bricks, pal. We're putting you a mask, calling you the Who. You're going to stink doing that. And basically, you're never going to work again unless if Brett requests.
Speaking of hit the bricks, Jimmy Snuka culminating a three-year run definitively as Jobber to the Stars. As The Undertaker squashes him in 420 here in the first one.
By the way, yes.
A number near and dear to your heart, yes. No doubt.
And by the way, let me tell you something. I have never, there is no squash in WrestleMania history that mm-hmm. warms my heart more than this one. You're probably saying, what the hell? You're probably saying 420, what is it? I thought that was a couple. I hope The Undertaker remembers matches like this.
Yeah.
Okay, it's already too late, quite frankly, for him to be it. Okay,
right.
Jimmy Snuka was a major name several years before.
Right.
And the announcers, again, I'm going to put over the Monsoon and Heenan, who are much maligned. I mean, they're not, you know, Jim Ross and Gordon Solie or anything, but they did a great job here. Because we should talk about 90 Stunk. Their mm-hmm. biggest hit, though, clearly, was bringing in Mean Mark.
Right.
With what seemed like a stupid gimmick, you know, the Dead Man or the Undertaker was. And he was over from the word go, man.
Could you believe this? I mentioned this to you maybe somewhere about a year ago that this is just kind of a weird thing, the way that it worked out, that Callaway came in as The Undertaker. It was about 6 months after WrestleMania VI, the last wrestling appearance of Andre the Giant. He sort of took his role as this big special attraction for the next couple of years. It's never been acknowledged as a passing of the torch, but I always found great coincidence that in the same calendar year, the one legend leaves, the other one comes in. The Undertaker would subsequently transcend being a special attraction, just as Andre did subsequently, but I've always seen great similarities in their presentation.
You're true. I mean, because obviously Undertaker, he winds up winning the belt later in 91.
Right.
But, you know, it's a real cup of coffee. And
right.
for the next, like, 4 or 5 years, he was always kind of like in that number two match on every
right.
big show. So that's a great point by you. But the announcers here make a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, he just, like, they basically say, wow, Jimmy Snuka, all-time legend. The Undertaker, he just buried him. Like, you know, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he does. I mean, Jimmy Snuka gets no offense here.
Right.
I mean, Undertaker no-sells everything, man.
Right.
And, again, new, and it was the complete right move. I don't want to hear any Jimmy Snuka apologists say, oh, Jimmy deserved more than this that he got here. No, he didn't.
Not at this point.
Okay, hit the bricks, Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah. The cat was already out of that bag with all the jobs he'd done. I'm going to skip over the semi-main on this. We'll come back to it last. But this one always confused me. Tenryu and Kateyu defeated Demolition. Why would they put over the Japanese guys over Demolition?
This was pretty much it for them. You know, we soon got... Well, Kona Crush didn't come until, like, the next year. The Repo Man.
Well, why wouldn't you give the rub to the Rockers or somebody? I just don't get that.
Well, they were doing a... there was the third Japanese promotion was springing up at the time, that SWS.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing a big joint show with them. This is something that I clearly didn't know at the time. But
okay.
I kind of been doing some reading, you know, in the years subsequent.
Okay.
And it was kind of you talk about no heat, man. This was the first match out of intermission. Remember the old intermissions at WrestleMania? We kind of talked about that, I think, last time.
Right.
This dog had no... I remember at the time being so, like, first of all, who are these Japanese guys that aren't managed by Mr. Fuji? Okay.
They were Japanese guys that were presented as pro wrestlers from Japan, as opposed to stock WWE Japanese or wrestler characters or WWF.
That didn't stop a disastrous Regis Philbin interview with these guys occurring, where he was asking them questions and they didn't know. Of course, since they don't speak English, they just no-sold everything. Okay, not exactly something Regis is going to put on his, I believe, career retrospective. Okay, not exactly equivalent to working with Kelly Ripa. Okay.
No.
Although better than Kathy Lee Gifford, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, but this you want to talk about one of the most forgettable and meaningless WrestleMania matches? I'll put this up against any.
The next one's got to be on the list also. Big Boss Man defeated Mr. Perfect by disqualification for the Intercontinental title.
That had a ton of heat going in.
Did it have a lot of heat? All right.
Remember, that was the whole...
Insulted my mother.
Mother and led to, Rude. They got rid of Rude. And the Boss Man went through everyone in the Heenan family. He beat, which wasn't a lot at the time. He beat Haku and the Barbarian, I think, it basically both.
No offense to Ray Traylor. I just wasn't a fan of the Boss Man character. Bored me. Bored me.
I thought this was the most over he was.
Yeah,
true. A lot of people, myself included, as a 10-year-old who bought into him, he was hot at this point, thought he was going over here.
Right.
It's kind of shocking that he did. All signs pointed to it. It long term, it's better that they waited to have Perfect put Bret over at SummerSlam.
Right.
But, Andre kind of comes. I mean, Boss Man was a big deal here. They brought Andre back out. Remember, Andre interferes in this thing?
Yeah, but it was better that they didn't put the belt on him.
It was really surprising they didn't. History says,
You know what I compare it to? It's like the near misses Brutus Beefcake had with the belt at various pay-per-views. It's like, boy, it's a good thing they didn't pull the trigger.
Yeah, it's like, okay, he kind of deserved it, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But, he was hot. But
But somebody better was going to be coming along.
A DQ ending is weak.
Right.
I said this WrestleMania was underrated, by the way.
This one's not. This next one.
Oh, that's right. We skipped over the good one.
This next one's not going to buttress it any. Earthquake defeating a face Greg Valentine in 3:14.
That's about 2:36 too long, I think. They gave him Greg Valentine. We talked about this. I don't know why we talked about this on the phone last night.
Yeah.
But Greg Valentine's a terrible baby face. I don't care what year it is. I don't care what he's doing with the pro.
He could have been a great anti-hero in 86 or 87, but I agree. Yeah. I think he could have been coming off of it, but that would have broken the mold.
We have a webcam in here. I'm doing my best Stephen A. Smith face when Skip Bayless talks about Tim Tebow.
Yeah, okay. you do look unpersuaded. Yes. We talk about this next one a little bit.
Squash-O-Rama.
Legion of Doom.
There weren't
Power
as many Squash-O-Ramas on this one as six, it seemed.
I don't think so. Although the Mountie defeating Tito Santana in 121 certainly was.
Yeah, this was right before El Matador. This was, by the way, Tito's sixth consecutive WrestleMania loss for those keeping score at home.
Yeah, hard to believe. Virgil defeated Ted DiBiase by countout, the long-awaited Virgil-Ted DiBiase feud.
I want to tell you something right now. Mm-hmm. It was kind of for DiBiase, it's obviously not, his career highlight. I think if they made a DVD about him, I think, certainly it gets a chapter.
It might be the fact he was able to carry Mike Jones to a, somewhat passable match.
This was really heavily hyped. And anyone who tells me that Virgil was not over for a short period of time, okay, he certainly wasn't over when he was at...
on short.
Okay, yeah, he wasn't over when he was at Parmatown Mall, okay? I'll tell you that much, okay? With Joe Lindway snapping the photos or whoever. But, this was, again... this didn't disappoint the way, again, that some of those WrestleMania 6 matches disappointed. Like, to me, I think this was actually better than the...
Still no count-out win? What?
Well, they were building to the match where he wins the million-dollar title at SummerSlam, I guess. Piper was involved here, if you remember. Sensational Sherry, who we obviously have to talk about. It's going to make no sense bringing her up here. She joins DiBiase here after, being with the Macho Man for 2 years.
Right.
The Macho King, pardon me. And this, to me, though, was better than, DiBiase Jake the previous year.
Yeah.
And on paper, it shouldn't have been. It was a good – this, to me, was a good and well-done angle with, humiliated. I'm sorry. The Virgil face turn at the Royal Rumble that year is awesomely executed. There is no conceivable way that could have been executed any better than they did.
Yeah.
And I always respect angles, even if I don't like them necessarily, and this is not my favorite. That can't be that they were executed perfectly.
They didn't have the caliber of worker to follow up the angle, but I agree. If you take that out of the mix, what they did was impeccable.
Virgil, it's one of those things now, you get a guy Ricardo Rodriguez is with, Alberto Del Rio for 5 minutes, and they want to, do something. They want to change it up.
Right.
These guys have been together for, over 3 years, so it meant something.
It really, really did. And then... The match that was the semi-main, almost sort of co-main of the card because of the stipulation.
And the reason to watch this show.
Yeah. It turned out to be one of the great matches of all time at WrestleMania, the retirement match. The Ultimate Warrior defeated Randy
Which
Savage.
Which is kind of comical when you say that.
Yeah,
in
2048. A huge overachievement when you talk about the Warrior being in a great match. But Randy Savage, the consummate planner ahead of time, and Pat Patterson, I believe, playing a role also, too. The committee collectively put together the greatest overachievement maybe in WrestleMania history.
Yeah, this had a lot of heat going in, and they had not, believe it, and the crowd really bought the career-ending Stiff.
Right.
They had not killed Stiffs on pay-per-view in 1991 yet. Okay, they were close, but they hadn't done it quite yet. You're right. The Ultimate Warrior, I hope, and he probably didn't because he's a real prick by all accounts, needed to shake a lot of hands.
Although I like his politics.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he could have beat Mitt Romney on Super Tuesday. I don't know.
Queering don't make the world go round.
Yeah. Yeah. But let me tell you, well, how ironic that Pat Patterson booked this match.
Oh!
Okay. But this is a minor miracle. I mean, we talked about the Warrior Hogan is good.
Yeah.
But it, in a way, if it wasn't at least good, that would have been kind of like catastrophe, considering the spot it was in. This was in the middle of the card. Now, it was the second featured match on the show, and then you're right, in many ways, the one that people were looking forward to the most, because Hogan's slaughter was a formality. The fact that this match is so much better than the Hogan Warrior one from the previous year is an unthinkable achievement, almost. I mean,
well, Savage is a better worker than Hogan.
True, but It's just not even close. And I mean, rating, I give this like
four. It's not even close how much better Savage is than Hogan.
That's true. I guess the Savage factor, you can't understate that enough, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's just like, this is so by far and away the Ultimate Warrior's best match.
Sure.
And again, Randy Savage was by far and away probably his best opponent. But just how good this was. It's not like, it's like, okay, he wrestles Randy Savage, of course, is his best. I mean, it's unbelievable. To me, this match, first of all, I love that he didn't run down to the ring.
Right.
For a couple reasons. This is the real smart mark of me kind of dissecting this stuff. One, it made the match kind of seem special.
Sure.
Career versus career. Again, that was really heavily hyped.
Right.
We'll get to that in a moment, too. But it also ensured that he didn't blow up 5 minutes into the match like he always does.
Right.
And because he was gone, I mean, this had so much heat. Coming off Savage screwing him out of costing him the title at Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And it is just a wonderful match. To me, other than the Savage Steamboat match at WrestleMania 3, this is clearly the second best match of the first seven WrestleManias.
Yeah, it was.
And elevates this WrestleMania into the average group. I talked about breaking it into five groups. This would be the middle one, I think.
It does. And it had great angle stuff going throughout. And then pass the match,
which I think is the key, and he adds it on. I give this match gets 4.5 stars from me.
Sherry turns
for those
on
keeping
Savage.
Score at home.
Right. After the match, after he has lost his career, Elizabeth comes out of the crowd and tackles her. A big reunion hug with Randy
people
Savage.
People were legitimately, fun of it, if you will, and, you know, I would. But, you know, there were women crying in the front row at this reunion of Savage and Elizabeth. And, yeah, I mean, it was just, there was so much drama. Remember, I mean, there were a lot of great, even before, remember, like, Savage's, like, the five elbow drops and the Warrior kicks out? I mean, they were really busting a lot of stuff out. But you're right. To me, almost as memorable as the match, and Warrior almost screws this thing up, by the way, with the looking at the hands thing. Come on.
Right.
We didn't need that.
Well, the other thing is, too, I question, because there was this whole thing about, they knew they were going to bring Savage back at a certain point. I'm thinking at the time, they thought at a bare minimum they were going to keep him on ice for a significant period of time.
Yes,
I agree. The foot on the chest pin is an absolute burial.
Yeah, that is right. That is not talking. I mean, yeah, he pins him with one. I mean,
one foot on the chest, Kyle Ross.
And the announcers kind of weren't ready.
And he was main eventing WrestleMania the next year. I mean,
yeah.
Think about that.
The announcers kind of didn't seem. I wonder if he was supposed to do that, Warrior. Because even
that would be funny.
He even puts his jacket on, too, that he came to the ring with.
Yeah.
Because the announcers didn't seem ready for it. They're like, Heenan's like, no, I can't believe it's over. And then you're right. Then Sherry comes in and starts kicking a man when he's down, literally.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, who they had spotted in the crowd.
Right.
You know, like, obviously she was planted. I don't think she just happened to buy a ticket. I think she, you know, but, you know, runs over the railing. They do this emotional return. It's unbelievable. I mean, it elevates the match to even greater status, I think.
It does.
But the great irony of this is, and this is where I actually wanted to spend the bulk of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You hit on it with, okay, obviously, it's crazy to me considering how much longer he worked in the main events in WCW, like 8 years after, that they would just, like, oh, well, Savage is done. They obviously were going to bring him back.
Right.
But I think that you're right. The decision to bring him back was sped up by what? The firing of the Ultimate Warrior at SummerSlam.
That's right.
Because the Warrior, people remember, was programmed with Jake Roberts. And this will be a great way to, I think, transition to the next year's WrestleMania, because I thought after a kind of real dead year and a half, in the end of 91, I thought they started picking it up again. And there were some interesting angles
Flair
going.
Came in. Flair
coming in is the big one.
Yeah.
But heel turn Jake Roberts, man. You give me the heel Jake Roberts. I thought that was awesome. And they did this really kooky, crappy angle with Jake and Undertaker conspiring to turn on the Ultimate Warrior. Remember the Ultimate Warrior trials?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are universally, I don't know what drugs someone was doing to film these, but
yeah.
I mean, quite frankly, I wish I could have experienced them. But
you may have in your 4 years at the Harvard.
Yes. I don't know if they were this good, man, because I'll tell you, I've watched this before. I'm like, ooh, we doggy. I don't know what's going on here. But the Warrior, who was involved in the main event of SummerSlam with Hulk Hogan, a meaningless, awful main event against the Triangle of Terror, which was Slaughter, Adnan, and Colonel Mustafa.
Right.
Okay. He held Vince McMahon up for money. You know, this has been on DVDs. Vince up for money. Vince fired him after the show, leaving Jake kind of without a program, and that was going to be like a big fall program, Warrior versus Jake.
Right.
The freshly heel turned Jake. So what did they do? The other half of that main event of Summit was the match made in heaven. You know, that was called the match made in hell.
Right.
Which was the storyline marriage of Randy Savage and Elizabeth, which was, they did use Savage. You know, I guess that was their plan to use.
Well, and he was a TV announcer a lot of the time, too.
He
never went away.
Yeah, I mean.
But he wasn't
in
the ring.
How about those old superstars with Vince McMahon, Roddy Piper, and Randy Savage on commentary?
They were horrible. But
you know what? They were kind of funny, though, and sometimes. Do you remember when, like, McMahon and Piper were, like, the two buddies when he proposed? They did the big proposing angle. They're
right.
Like, come on, do it, Randy. You know, that was kind of funny.
The whole thing, which in typical wrestling black humor style, the Randy Savage Elizabeth on-camera marriage happened at about the 11:59 point of their real marriage.
That's too bad. That is too bad.
That is.
But anyway, so with Warrior gone, I think that made them that they needed somebody to feud with Jake in the kind of the second top. Well,
right.
They had a lot of good programs going. You know, they had Hogan Undertaker for the Survivor Series. Flair came in to feud with Piper, which was good. That was hot. And then Savage was inserted. You know, he was still, you know, retired. They do the great angle where Jake and Undertaker interrupt the wedding with the Cobra. And then, so it's Jake and Savage, which was a million times better than Warrior Jake ever could have hoped to be. And I love, you talk about a forgotten classic. Put on this Tuesday. Here's another recommendation.
Yeah.
This Tuesday in Texas,
okay.
That dog pay-per-view. Jake Roberts, by the end of this show, is so over his heel. He is over as a heel to a point that maybe 10 guys in company history have been over.
And the post-match interview.
When he just brags about bitch-slapping Elizabeth, how it was like better. He basically says it was better than an orgasm.
Yeah.
And Gorilla Monsoon is like incredulous on commentary, screaming how he needs to be thrown out of the promotion. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was... And it was so awesome. He just kept DTing him. And remember, he grabs Miss Elizabeth by the hair. He's like, do you love him? Do you love... I mean, you watch it. It's just like, how unbelievable is this man? It's one of the few times that I think a lot of people can truly appreciate a wrestling performance's art.
That and the Cobra bite that Savage took in that time period, they were doing some hardcore stuff.
People remember that. That's a real memorable angle.
Yeah. By their standards, it was really something. But what I want to back up to again is a second.
Sorry.
You talked about, well, there was a... You said
as we move back from November to April.
Well, you said that there was a void where Savage ended up getting reinstated in part of the timing because of the Ultimate Warrior. Here's what contributed to that.
They also brought in Sid Justice, too.
Yes,
by the way, I forgot they brought
him
in too.
They
really injected some much needed top guys at the end of that year.
They did, but here's what's very interesting about that. What they did with Warrior in that time period, that was one of the last times that they did it, and maybe after what happened with Warrior, maybe they decided they didn't want to make anybody so instrumental. What they used to do back in the day, we talked about this with some old WrestleManias prior to this, where a guy would be in a program with one guy, but at WrestleMania he'd be doing something else. The Warrior was part of the blow-off with the Iraqi connection there at SummerSlam with Hogan. The Warrior was pursuing his vengeance for losing the title in the first place.
I guess that's why he was included.
So there was the tail end of that program, but it was a whole nother program started up with Jake Roberts that would ultimately never go anywhere because of that. But he had two things going simultaneously, and that was getting to be a bygone thing in the promotion, guys having two completely disconnected programs going on at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you never see that anymore.
That was one of the last instances.
Yeah, and I always thought that it wouldn't, Slaughter, because of the angle, you couldn't really mix him with other heels. I thought if there were ever two heels you could have mixed him with, it would have been Jake. That would have been interesting to me if they would have done Slaughter, Jake, and Undertaker. It would have at least added some intrigue, some new.
It would have.
I'm sorry. Colonel Mustafa's wife, okay?
Right.
We couldn't have thought that the heel team was going over there.
No.
And to me, the Hogan-Warrior pairing was not so much about Warrior getting vengeance for the Rumble. Even though you bring up a good point, maybe that's what they were going for. I always viewed it as, okay, well, they always kind of portrayed them as equals after WrestleMania VI,
okay,
at least for a year and a half. Because remember at the Survivors,
right,
the 90s
Survivors.
Where they did the grand finale match,
right,
again doing Warrior No Favors as champion. Hogan survived with them. It was those two,
right,
double main event at Summer. They were kind of presented as equals. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point you bring up, that it was one of the last times, but it all worked out. It, to me, it was just always interesting, the career-ending storyline from Warrior Savage, that because Warrior, it's funny that by the end of the year, Warrior was out of who wins the match is out of the promotion. Savage is hotter than he ever was.
Yeah, and I guess that's a logical...
As a babyface.
That's a logical way to take it into WrestleMania here. It ended up being, again, a double main event at WrestleMania 8 because of, you mentioned... Sid Justice came into the mix. They did a good job of mixing and matching in that six-month period between SummerSlam and WrestleMania, their main event players. You are right that it freshened up the scene.
They had a lot better because they brought in, Piper started wrestling again after kind of taking a year off. He was injured. He got in that motorcycle accident. But
and they intertwined ad hoc alliances, say, between Ric Flair and The Undertaker that were well done.
Yeah, and Hogan was kind of it was at this point that I really began to get sick of Hulk. But now it's interesting with now we roll into WrestleMania 8, thing got a little hotter. You talk about what were they going to do at WrestleMania 7, long term, if you look back, maybe Hogan Warrior 2, then it became up with the Slaughter thing intervenes. When Flair comes in, don't you just think, everyone had to think, and it was originally scheduled to be the main event of WrestleMania 8. In many ways, and this hurts this WrestleMania, I think, in some people's eyes, that they didn't do the big Hogan-Flair match.
That should have been their first meeting. You hold it off.
Yeah.
And the old Vince McMahon would have known how to do that.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Some people have said, and by some people I mean WWE apologists, that the time Flair came in, it was... In the old days when there wasn't multiple pay-per-views, you probably get away with it. But even something like Hogan Andre, that angle was started in January. Flair came in late August, early September. To hold that off with two pay-per-views in between, granted, Survivor Series and Royal Rumble, you can keep them apart. And they did, actually. It was a long time to wait. They had the house shows, what was the final nail in the coffin? Well, there were two nails in the coffin. One was the house shows were disappointing.
Yeah.
Headline them. They did a couple big ones, but most of the point they were disappointed. Now, a lot of people criticized.
They
a lot of people
it half-heartedly for champ versus champ. It was so well, half-heartedly
yeah, because a lot of people have criticized the way Flair was handled with the real world champion. I'm not one of those people. I bought Flair.
That's as close as they came to acknowledging the outside world.
Yes. So, to me, look, they weren't going to say NWA world champion. Or they were going to bring Jim Ross in for a cameo on the mic and put over, you know, the great Lou Fez Pat O'Connor matches, okay?
By God, King, this is going to settle it once and for all.
Yeah, you know. They weren't going to do that, so you have to be realistic. But the real reason was, okay, there was a very big name in wrestling. Now, you know, Dr. George Zahorian's name began to rear its ugly head during this time period.
It did.
And Hulk had to take a little vacation. That's the real reason this match didn't happen, because you do Hogan Flair. First of all, the setup would have been perfect had Hogan stayed. Okay. Yeah, my opinion on the Royal Rumble 1992 is well known.
Right.
Okay, there will never be a better Rumble. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care how long they do the gimmick. There will never be a better Rumble than Royal Rumble 1992. It is one of the three greatest matches of the 1990s in that company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, take that, anyone who will listen. And Flair, you know, basically does his NWA shtick. And let's talk a little about this, how this builds up. Flair basically comes in, and I'm sorry, everyone. You know, this isn't me being smart, Mark Kyle Ross. He outshined the entire, like, they, again, you talk about closest they ever came to acknowledging the outside world. No heel had ever been put over like Ric Flair had been put over that night at the Royal Rumble.
Right.
They basically give him number three, do your thing, Ric. You know, heels usually were, you know, fat monsters who would come in late back then, get the event. You know, you're going to come in and put over, do what, be,
right.
We're actually going to let you be Ric Flair in the WWE. The Ric Flair, the people, you can do all your NWA stuff in here as much as you can. Carry all these guys to the spots of their lives, which he did. And in the process, he exposed, Hogan was booed, okay?
He was.
Unless you get the Coliseum video where they overdubbed the booing.
Right.
Okay. That's not me making things up either, Paul Belfie, okay? It happened. Okay? The man was booed.
I think even Belfie would admit that.
The man was booed, which is makes Royal Rumble 92 even better. The fact that that's the first time there was negative reaction to Hogan. You know, he does the thing with Sid, and it didn't work out for him. But all the crowd was chanting Sid during that face-off. You know, Sid kind of was supposedly turned heel in that match by dumping Hogan.
Right.
Crowd didn't react the way they thought. That was a big misread by the old creative team.
Well, they always build the Rumble as every man for himself, and then we're supposed to believe that that doesn't apply to Hogan.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. Kayfabe point by you, Ricky Morris. So what they did was, with Hogan at this point beginning to fear for his livelihood, okay, the Arsenio Hall appearance was not went a little worse than the Brother Love show, I think. Okay, and they split the main events for WrestleMania. Remember, they originally announced Hogan Flair. This isn't like something like they never even acknowledged they were going to try to. They originally acknowledged Hogan. Remember, they held that fall press conference with Jack Tunney, named the number one contender,
right?
And Sid does the kind of like the
seething,
seething promo. Oh, this is bogus, or whatever he kept saying. You know, he's just stammering over his words. Sid turns on him on a Saturday night's main event, and they decide to split the main events. They do Hogan-Sid, because Hogan leaves, obviously, for a year after this show. This is officially, by the way, the end of the era, this show, WrestleMania 8. After this, it goes down. Things really start to take a tumble. And then Flair, without an opponent, they kind of pluck Randy Savage, who sort of won his feud with Jake Roberts at this point. They wrestled on the same show Sid turns on Hogan, and he beats him. And then they just kind of, oh, well, it'll be Flair Savage now for the title. And then they do that wonderful angle with Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Flair, you know,
she was mine before she was yours.
Yeah,
woo!
Basically, there was like these doctored photos in Flair. The inference was that he used to fuck Elizabeth. Pardon me. That's the second time I used that term on this program.
That's
I apologize.
That's outstanding, Kyle.
That, you know, he did Elizabeth before Savage. She was mine.
Way to cover it for 10 seconds late.
Yes. And that angle worked big time, man. That drew a lot of heat for that Flair Savage match, which I think was even better than the Savage Warrior match the previous year.
Yeah, it was.
Not a lot of people have it. I give this match 4.75 stars. What do you got to say about that?
It was a very good match. I would agree with that, and the setup for it was excellent. As far as why they went back to Savage, and we talked about it at the time, Warrior out of the picture, although ironically, we'll talk about it a little bit later, he would come back into the picture at the end of the show.
Probably to fill the void left by Hogan.
It's not like they were going to immediately put the belt on him. You talk about the tiers of stars that they had in that in the promotion. Savage, as a face, was, especially if they were going to be turning Sid Justice, he was the only one that was on that tier where he could take the baton from Hogan.
Plus, Undertaker just turned face before the show and was not ready. Even though he had been the champion, they couldn't go. It would have made no sense.
It would have been too big of a risk because you didn't know how he was going to do as a face.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Savage, too. They probably looked at it and
well, they needed an angle. They needed a hook, and the whole Elizabeth thing.
Right.
I don't know who came up. I don't know if they made the decision to have that match, and then like, oh,
poop,
we need an angle. Or if they're like, okay, we've got something.
Flair being the Playboy-type character, it probably didn't take them too long on that.
Sure.
Go back to Precious and Jimmy Garvin. I mean, this was the MO for Ric Flair storylines.
Sure.
But having said that, they probably looked at it that, okay, Savage did pretty good business a couple of years ago as a lame duck champion. We knew all along we were going to take the belt and put it back on Hogan. Hogan's out of the picture now. Let's see how Savage does without the net. Not as good the second time around, safe to say.
No, it was
but
not.
But that's like you said, it was a really good main event match there.
That
one
was
of two main events, really.
It was interesting because this was the first time ever the world title, it was contested in the middle of the show.
Yes.
Hogan goes on last because, you know, why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But,
it was billed as a retirement match, but strongly
hinted. They were talking about, like, you know, Sid claimed it was his destiny to retire Hulk Hogan, and it wound up being his last match for a year, Hogan, but WrestleMania 8 is a tale of two halves to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are any other notes we want to hit on Macro before we hit WrestleMania 8, the first half of the show is tremendous. The second half, which
culminated in that match.
Which culminates with Flair Savage. Unbelievably heated match. Flair Blades, by the way, got himself in big-time trouble with the boss afterwards because Bret Hart bladed the match before, but he made up a lie that it was hard way, which Vince believed in. What an idiot this Vince is. How do you believe
that? And somehow or another, Vince always believed Bret's lies about that. He believed Bret's lie that it was hard way juice against Davey Boy Smith in December of 95.
I thought they gave the green light for the first time.
And then of course WrestleMania 13. Steve Austin just cut his head. How Vince McMahon believed?
Really?
That, yeah, yeah.
No.
You're wrong. Read Bret's book. Bret swears to God in his book that Vince believed that the cut on Steve Austin's head at WrestleMania 13 was hard way. I am not lying. Vince was that credulous. Apparently, Vince would believe.
The problem with me in most wrestling books is I'll just start skimming them and I miss like these points.
You missed the good part there, then.
Wow.
Vince. Yeah, apparently. And
by the way, shame on Bret Hart for not manning up and just admitting things and just letting Flair. If I was Ric Flair, I would hate Bret Hart too for throwing me under the bus like that.
Oh, who knew? Right? Who knew that of any of the things in life that Vince McMahon has that are kryptonite, one of them is. Whenever Bret Hart lies to him about juice in a match, that he will always believe Bret Hart.
How about, but you know, kind of their pain is our gain. Blood in two matches at WrestleMania?
Yeah. Great.
I mean, I'll take them up. And Savage Flair to me is better than Savage Warrior the year previous. I give it 4.75.
Yeah.
Okay, making it one of the 8 best matches in WrestleMania history. All right. There's only 8 matches I've ever given 4.75 or above to at WrestleMania.
Okay.
This is one of them. I mean, just Heenan, unbelievable on commentary, rooting for Flair unabashedly. Mr. Perfect turns in a tremendous performance in the court, just cheating very liberally.
Right.
A lot of people don't like the ending to this. I thought it fit in perfectly.
Savage cheating.
With Savage, you know.
Faces didn't generally cheat.
That's why it worked, because like now it wouldn't work. People are like, oh, wow, well, why wouldn't he cheat?
Right.
Back then, it's like, whoa, man, he cheated to win?
Right.
You know, that worked big time, because for those who have not seen the match or maybe only seen one, Flair cheats very liberally in this match. There were a lot of other things, too, like near falls. There were a lot of, like, they didn't do a lot. A lot of wrestling match, WWF matches, NWA matches did them, but didn't have the near falls built in. This had a lot of near falls built in, you know. And then, again, post-match angle involving Elizabeth. Tremendous. Flair, bloody yelling, what about me?
Right.
What about me? Kisses her. Savage. See, now with this post-match angle, it made sense. It did justify this being in the middle of the show because there's a wild brawl afterwards with Savage going crazy when Flair kisses Elizabeth.
Right.
Perfect. And a young Shane McMahon, by the way, involved in this fracas.
Right. Yeah, that wouldn't have been a good show-ending angle.
No, especially because both guys cut absolutely phenomenal promos. You talk about those Savage Jake promos at this Tuesday in Texas.
Right.
Let's give Savage and Flair two great promos anyway in the history of the business credit. They cut these great promos afterwards. Like Savage, he's like, I want the whole Nature Boy package now. You know, I thought you couldn't have made me any more mad than I was going in, but you managed to now, you know. Just unbelievable stuff. This is kind of because Flair bladed. This match seems to be kind of be like washed away.
Right.
You know, because, you know, Savage never on good standing with the company. Flair bleeds, which wasn't permitted. This match, to me, is a true, I mean, I've used the term forgotten classic, maybe a little too liberally, how appropriate.
Yes,
during
you.
This program, but
all right, Mr. Blue State.
Yes.
Well, by the way, a little bit of irony here also, too. These guys wrestling one another. In installment two of the series, in talking about WrestleMania 3, I remember you and I were bantering a bit back and forth about who was the better Rick Steamboat opponent, Savage or Flair. So that was like the trinity of great workers.
Yeah, it was.
Think about it.
And now Savage in particular was definitely past his prime.
Yeah.
Flair kind of coming out of it. I mean, he still gave the mother of all performances at the Royal Rumble in January. Savage, look, he showed that he could still hang clearly, but you would have had to wonder if 3 years earlier what this match could have been.
Right.
For
both of them, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the time off, I mean, Savage, granted, now.
Picture 89 Flair doing this match.
Yeah,
huh?
Now, keep in mind, too, the physiques began to deflate, how shall we say, from WrestleMania 7 to 8 with the steroid thing. I mean, there were a lot of backstage things going on for this WrestleMania that made the show kind of interesting. So,
well, let's touch on the first half of the card leading up to it, the part that was really good. Opening match, Shawn Michaels starting to get his big push. Shawn Michaels with Sensational Sherry defeated El Matador, a.k.a. Tito Santana, at 10:38. Tito, in his usual, by this point, WrestleMania jobber to the stars.
Seven straight loss at a WrestleMania.
Elevating Shawn Michaels.
Again,
first big singles match
of
his career.
The completely right decision. Now they would put El Matador over to Shawn Michaels and say Shawn didn't know how to work.
Yeah, they probably would.
By the way, Bob Heenan. Again, I don't mean to beat a dead horse. Bob Heenan, his commentary during these matches is just unbelievable. Like, it's just like, it's almost like I actually stopped watching the match and just listened to the man. Like, he's just hilarious.
He is tremendous. The blow-off of the rather short-lived Undertaker Jake the Snake Roberts feud in 6:36.
Also the blow-off of Jake's WWE run. This was it.
Yes.
I believe he held the company up for some money beforehand.
Multiple tombstones, I think, including one on the floor.
And
I
no
believe.
Selling DDTs,
yeah,
too.
No selling DDTs.
I mean, the Undertaker was massive. Again.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Right move. Okay, take the guy who's given you everything. He's a big name, okay? No shame in it, Jake.
Right.
You've given us 6 good years, but guess what, man? Okay, we'll pay you your extra money. We're not happy about it. You know, that's kind of a dick thing to do. But, yeah, guess what? You're doing a mega job to The Undertaker tonight.
Right
thing to do. Undertaker, we talked about, God, is he over? He was over, man.
This whatever money he made for the next couple of years as a fan favorite,
the announcers
a lot of
were even kind of
right
like
here.
The announcers. You could always tell too; they were kind of like, "Wow, they didn't like use it in his terms, but they kind of even Monsoon. You could hear in his voice like, "Wow, this Undertaker is really over as a babyface."
Yeah.
You could kind of like hear it in the commentary.
Actually, it would be funny if they had used that terminology. If we could stumble upon an alternate version of commentary,
yes,
that would have been
maybe
awesome.
Maybe you and I can redub it and sell it. That would be soon.
That would be tremendous. one of the great undercard matches of the early years of WrestleMania. Bret Hart in 1351 regaining the WWF Intercontinental Championship from Roddy Piper. Another face-versus-face match, in the mold of Hogan Warrior.
Yeah, and I think just maybe a notch below just because of its position on the card.
Yeah.
This is a top 25 match in WrestleMania history, 4-star affair. Piper's best match, I think, in the WWF.
Because he was in with a great worker.
And the setup was great, too, here.
Yep.
Bret Hart wins the Intercontinental title for Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam the previous year.
Yeah.
Reports are hazy why they had him drop it to the Mountie. I have heard, and this is only kind of recent, I was reading about this, some old observers I was reading, that he was in some serious contract negotiations with WCW. Kay Allen Fry had taken over on the other station there and was offered a lot, was throwing around a lot of money.
Brett was going to show up at the Clash of Champions.
Yeah, yes, at 18 in Topeka, which was a very good Clash of Champions, by the way.
Maybe he could have done a run-in when Missy Hyatt got thrown in the barrel of water out
there. Yes, yes, from Abdul the Butcher. Yes, very good, very nice. Yes. Very sneaky point guard, yes. Anyway, it didn't work. And in the interim, the Mountie, who was obviously a disaster as a singles champion, according to anyone, he jobs to Piper like really quickly at the Royal Rumble. Really cool that Piper, you know, who had never had a singles title, never needed one, gets the Intercontinental title. And, you know, Brett, you know, he gets re-signed. It's like, okay, well, you got to put the title back on Brett.
Yep.
And a very, very, very rare clean pinfall loss by Roddy Piper here.
Piper is going to go to hit him with a bell, thinks better of it, doesn't do it. So the attack of conscience, I mean, the psychology was great.
Oh, God, they both, like, you know, they went in. It was supposed to be a friendly match. They cut this great promo beforehand where Piper's playing it. He's like, it's like one of those things where he thinks he's saying nice things, but it's kind of like, dude, you're kind of being a prick. He was like, I remember, you know, when you were a little kid and, you know, hanging out in the Hearts. And, you know, he's kind of like bringing up these embarrassing things.
He's bringing, because he was friends with the family. And they played off the family history.
Yeah. And Brett's like, and, you know, he's like, oh, remember that, buddy? You know, kind of like, you know, again, like he thinks he's, you know, doing a solid, but he's really kind of making a fool of himself. And Brett's like, take your hands off me, buddy. And Piper's like, oh, okay, I see. And it's just this great back and forth. And they kind of do stuff where they work it as a technical match, but then they both lose their tempers at various points. It's so good. I love this match.
Well, and this is a thing where, in looking back, where the company was too subtle for its own good in elevating guys. Because if you remember at the time, for the most part, I mean, a guy like Sid Justice or whatever, you would just see when they would put the rocket up his ass, right? But as far as with Bret Hart, and I always said, boy, that whole thing in the fall of 92, it came out of nowhere. I mean, if you look back on it in retrospect, this match against Piper was one of the most hyped at WrestleMania. He had the match at SummerSlam.
Piper was a big deal, yeah.
I mean, Bret Hart, I still maintain it came way too out of nowhere when he beat Flair. But in retrospect, through the eyes of history, they were positioning Bret to be much bigger than he was.
Oh, this was a big win.
But That was the problem with their star-making apparatus at the time. They would train you to, like, when you were able to see guys as a main event star. And they hadn't trained those of us in the audience to see Brett in that way. He had done these things, but we weren't.
You look back at it now.
In some cases, it was more about the announcing or the vignettes than it was what happened in the ring. It was like, this guy's a main event
guy. Or you had to, like, kind of like be in the sphere of Hogan.
Sphere of Hogan is another way, which Brett never was.
Yeah, that's a tremendous... What you just said right there was a tremendous soliloquy, Rick Morris.
Okay,
I thought that was phenomenal analysis. I'd like to just say that.
Thank you.
I dare you to even try to pull something close to that with the next match.
I was going to say, the next one, maybe the worst ever epitome of a WrestleMania throwaway match, an eight-man tag... Big Boss Man, Virgil, Sarge Slaughter, and Jim Duggan. Sarge Slaughter in the I Want My Country Back phase.
Don't you think LeBron James could cut a similar promo and come back to Cleveland, by the way? You know, I always thought that. I got my city back. Come on. Tell me you wouldn't welcome him back with open arms. I'd be the first to extend my hand and say, you know what, LeBron, where you been?
If by welcome him back you mean hot green loogie in his face, then that's exactly what I would do is welcome him back. But
got my country back. Come on. Tell me you wouldn't love to see LeBron cut that promo. On ESPN, no less, of course.
Yes. Only if he's going to renounce the Miami Heat and Dwayne Wade in some kind of a brutal kind of a way. And ESPN, while we're at it. Yeah. They defeated the Nasty Boys, Repo Man, and the Mountie. Complete throwaway match. We've already talked way too much about it, and we haven't said anything.
Yeah, featuring atrocious pre-match comedy from Ray Combs.
Yeah. Ugh.
I mean, oh, boy. I mean, yeah, consider the stuff Heenan was doing on the show.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Right. That's...
And then you have the world title match.
Insert Ray Combs joke here, by the way.
Okay. I think I did in the old SNS days, and it was regrettable.
The little guy was horrified.
I think buttons were flat being pushed. Yes. Alarm bells were being sounded. They're like you.
That's
you,
exactly why I mentioned it.
Yes. I think even by the standards of that program, people looked at me and said, "Okay, I think you've gone too far now, Kyle."
Okay. he sold for you so great at the time, I was not sure that was a sell job. Yes, I thought yes. that was legitimate. Now, that one was in the first half of the show, but it was more symbolic of what would happen in the second half of the show, the garbage matches. Tatanka defeated Rick Martel at 4:33.
This is obviously the world title match goes intermission.
Yeah.
Although, I just watched this last night in preparation because I haven't watched the second half of the show in so long. Mm-hmm. I feared I would have no comments on it. Mm-hmm. Pick something up. This is a total throwaway. Tatanka was the undefeated Native American. Right. Rick Martel cuts a hilarious promo before this match, saying he wonders if Tatanka has any, quote, reservations about the match. and he heard that he may not make it because he's outside scalping tickets. Okay. So corny. It's one of those things that only after only 27 viewings of WrestleMania 8 would choose that to find it funny. But this is the announcers no sell the match because they're busy the whole time. Monsoon's basically making fun of Heenan for Flair losing the title the whole match. They don't even pay. Like, Tatanka wins, and Bobby Heenan's like, Tatanka beat Rick Martel? What? You know? Like, I mean,
Please tell me Martel worked in at least one good firewater joke.
No, he didn't.
Oh!
Well, Heenan worked in a lot of several good Indian jokes.
Probably. Yeah. A horrible tag team title match. A bad program. Earthquake and Typhoon. Turning heel abruptly
face.
Face when the LOD went on the sidelines and Money Inc. swooped in and took their title shot.
We skipped that, by the way. Let's just hit this. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine.
Remember we talked about how deep the tag team division was a year prior?
Yeah, how quickly things change.
Rocker's broken up.
Yep.
Hart's broken up. You know, they still the Nasty Boys. But the Hearts and Rockers being broken up was obviously the two big things. But, yeah, the LOD had won the belts. They lose them to Money, Inc., which was kind of this bizarre thing that I get. LOD was feuding with the Natural Disasters. The Natural Disasters were not really over enough to justify getting the belts, I think.
Right.
So they throw this makeshift team of DiBiase and IRS together. Jimmy Hart gives them the Natural Disasters title shot. They win. LOD, they did this interview where they bring up Paul Ellering earlier in this show in the first half.
With Rocco.
Rocco had not come into play.
Oh, he had?
No.
Okay.
That was down the road.
It was good to see Ellering back. And
it was, and Heenan put the arrival were pretty big, but the plan all along was for LOD to get the belts back.
Right.
But, you know, Hawk fell off his rocker, and they wound up going to Japan. It didn't matter. So
right.
This is not when the Natural Disasters get they do an awful. At the time, it was kind of novice. Now it's been beaten to death, where the Money Inc. just was getting beat up, and they just run away.
Yeah, and that
God bless Monsoon for saying, well, I guess they don't want the purse money. You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
this was, at this point, this WrestleMania was kind of starting to fall off the wheels.
Yeah, that's X-Pac heat. That's the wrong kind of heat when you're just having a walk out of the ring, and because it's like, well, why wouldn't any cowardly heel do that in any championship match?
Yeah, it did kind of open up Pandora's box.
Yeah, on a psychology level, it was horrible. By the way, last note about this, too. One more thing that made the match as bad as it did. They were in that era. They were horrible. They were so horrible at taking heels that had run their course as heels and trying to milk something out of a hotshot face turn. See Hercules, see Greg Valentine. Certainly see Natural Disasters.
Yeah.
Not over as faces.
I'll tell you what, when they win the titles in the summer, I have
there's
this match on tape.
Pop.
There was a kind of a decent pop,
well,
but
because Money Inc. was over. And the fans just wanted to see them beat.
Yeah, you're right. That was an era where people pop for title changes.
That was heat.
You're
by
right, but yeah, the Natural Disasters are not exactly remembered as one of the finest teams of the generation.
No, they were awful. Between that one and the main event, they had started to institute at this point in time. Today it would be a Divas match.
Yeah.
But the sandwich match in between to kind of cool down the crowd. Owen Hart goes in there and defeats Skinner at 136.
A real blink and you'll miss it. A total nothing match.
The funny thing is this, though.
I know. If you give these two time and you had stripped away dumb gimmicks, it could have been good.
You put your finger on it. Because if we're talking Owen Hart versus some form of a heel Steve Kern.
That's not Skinner?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, the Skinner gimmick dictated that he was going to wrestle a horribly boring style.
And Owen Hart, like, he did, like, to make it even worse, like, it makes it kind of bad to watch. He spits in Owen's face.
Yeah.
And I don't like watching the match because I hate dip.
Uh-huh.
Like, consider the source, okay? All right, I'm a pretty open guy. Dip is just the most revolting thing to me ever, and I can't watch this match. Thank God it's only a minute and a half.
In light of what you've put into your body, that is a truly historic statement from you. It really is.
Dip is disgusting. Don't do dip, kids.
No, no, certainly not.
And don't watch Hulk Hogan's Sid Justice either.
I think I would advocate that kids do dip rather than watch this match because
this
it was
did not.
Horrible.
This was a bad close. Even more 12, like
28 is how long it took.
As big of formalities as the Hogan Bundy and Hogan Slaughter situations were, they were actually better matches than this. And it's funny because they screw up the end.
Papa Shango missed his cue.
First of all, what Papa Shango was doing involved in this, like out of nowhere,
was
beyond me. It was tied in because he would feud with the Warrior, the returning Ultimate Warrior, after this. So maybe that was the Warrior's call.
Yeah, but he had no tie to this ahead of time.
No, and Harvey Whippleman was randomly managing Sid. Sid, by the way, here's the big thing. He leaves, too, after this to, you know, go.
Not long thereafter, but yeah. It was almost softball season.
Yes. And it was pretty much right after because, he didn't do anything after this.
Well, he was penciled in for the initial feud against the Warrior, which, from a work rate perspective, that would have been horrific.
But still probably would have had more intrigue, I guess, than, it would have been hideous. But
the
big story here is, there's two things. One is Sid, people thought Sid, there's a kind of an urban legend that Sid was shooting, kicking out of the leg drop. No, Shango missed his cue. He was supposed to be down there in time to break up the pin. So they just do this lame DQ. It's just awful. It's a bad paint-by-numbers Hogan match. But the big thing is the Warrior returns out of nowhere. You know, his name had not been uttered since SummerSlam. Shango and Sid are double team. Warrior makes the save, kind of fill the void because Hogan leaves too.
Warrior, who would in this era of post-Zahorian, who would be wearing the painted muscle bodysuit on there, spurring up Paul McCartney-esque rumors that this was actually Warrior 2.0 in the form of another man.
Yeah, which
Helwig was dead.
Yes, it was all. Trust me, there's only one guy crazy enough. There's only one crazy Jim Helwig, folks.
Yeah, that's true. So a horrible main event.
You know, we kind of dog the second half of the show is bad. I still have this rated. Remember I talked about the five groups of five?
Yeah.
In the second best group, towards the bottom.
Yeah.
I have this as an above. This, to me, of the first eight WrestleManias, three is obviously the best.
Right.
Most people, myself included, have this rated as the second best. It's got 2 4-star matches.
And Undertaker Roberts is memorable. It's very memorable.
I'm like, no one likes to listen to wrestling commentary more than me. And give a Monsoon and Heenan, we're at their finest.
Right.
And I should also mention, too, it got bad after this. Like, this to me is the, we're going to talk, not today, but in our an eventual podcast, there's one that I kind of titled you called The Birth and Death of Attitude. We're going to cover a lot of, how are we going to cover all that ground in such a short time?
Right.
But, you know, how the Attitude era ended. This was the official, and I remember talking about this show, again, in school.
Right.
Ironic bringing it up. People, you know, I was like, oh, man, did you see catch WrestleMania last night? What happened? You know, I didn't get the show. Everybody's like, you won't believe the Ultimate Warrior's back. And I remember some other guy, man, I watched that. It was good. Yeah. By the next year, man, there was nobody in school ordering WrestleMania.
Right. Well, Hogan was gone. Warrior was gone again. Although Hogan was coming back the next year but would play a bigger part on the show than it certainly looked like going in. Yeah, this was the end of the era, but I can understand you giving this card a lot of slack. I would give this card a lot of slack because, again,
do you agree it's the second best WrestleMania that we've talked about so far?
I think so because, not only that, Hogan, it was a horrible main event, but it was the thing of you could, even at the time, you could see this was the end of an era. If not at this very moment, then it wasn't too far away.
That was the
away,
big storyline. It wasn't Hogan's last match.
In a dome WrestleMania main event match, that the atmosphere carries it to a certain level.
They did a great sit-down interview, him and Vince McMahon,
before
this. I don't know if you remember. They kind of show a clip of it before the match.
It was like a hint that he was going to retire.
Yeah. And George Zahorian not brought up, but that's
honestly,
okay.
Honestly, I mean, they should have been more explicit with it. You want to put the stip on a match. I'm stepping away. I'm what...
Well, here's the thing, but then you would... Well, I guess they did with Piper.
Yeah.
In WrestleMania 3, Piper called it his farewell match.
He knew he was going to be gone for at least some time anyways.
Yeah, don't you think that would have helped?
Milk it for the extra buys.
Yeah, if you say this is Hogan's farewell match, even though if you're lying...
Yeah, that's
and
what
know
I'm
you're, even if you're knowingly lying...
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
So
they were I'm sure they were lying with Savage also when he lost to the Warrior.
Well, that wasn't the main draw of the show, although it is a big part. But
right,
we should point out, too, another thing about this WrestleMania.
Right.
after the previous 4 years, not 800 matches. They only had like 8 or 9. They had 8 or 9.
They were starting to get to the modern mold in that way.
Now, it was also kind of out of it was something out of need where the talent roster had been significantly depleted by this point.
Right, right. Well, the other thing is, too, that I think we should mention that we were starting to see with the WrestleManias, and this went from when the roots of this came from when Hulk Hogan first dropped the belt to Randy Savage, but then you saw it again with the Warrior. That would set up subsequently on pay-per-views sometimes double main events, Hulk Hogan and whoever was the champion at the time. This was billed as a double main event with Hulk Hogan's match and with the title match. The roots of what we see today, where there's about 4 or 5 really featured matches. One of them is going to be the ostensible main event, but this is where they were starting to get away from that model, because that model is inextricably wedded to Hulk Hogan, the model of the early years. There's the Hulk Hogan match for the championship, and then there's everything else. Once Hulk Hogan and the title would start to diverge in the pay-per-view era, then you would see this.
Yeah, we talked about, you kind of made your fantasy draft help.com analogy.
Yes.
Where about the huge drop-off between a Tier 1 and Tier 2.
Yeah.
The drop-off wasn't as severe. This was a legitimate double main event where,
yes,
you know, you had a big world title match featuring Ric Flair and then the Hogan Sid thing now,
because Savage Warrior was like a pseudo second main event.
Yeah. So,
but this was an explicit 2 main event show.
Yes.
And you wouldn't see that necessarily much the next couple of years, but this
just because there wasn't, you couldn't get 2 big matches on the show.
Right. But it planted the seed for what was to come, and what better way to leave it on than that, as we have covered WrestleMania's 6, 7, and 8, Kyle Ross, here, and this longest yet. Fourth version of the Kyle Ross History of WrestleMania 9-part anthology. You are selling legitimate shock as you see that we've just crossed the 2-hour mark for this one. You are now speechless. I guess I'll leave it at that, ladies and gentlemen. We'll conclude with Kyle Ross speechless as we've crossed the 2-hour mark. This has been part 4 of the 9-part installment, Kyle Ross's History of WrestleMania anthology.